Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
Been driving around in it's difficult to explain sometimes why a car can feel satisfying, and occasionally I think it's the position of the A-pillar and the depth of the windscreen. And that sounds so boring to start a podcast with those types of words.
No, I reckon there's some car company ergonomicists listening going, yes, at last.
Well, I mean, if people are offended by that, we could just start the podcast again and I'll talk about toilets or something, but I
yes. Have you ever drunk balsamic vinegar? No, I know what you mean. I think these things are the intangibles of why a car can feel good.
Yeah.
Or not.
No, I'm with you on that. I say that because I have driven it before, but the last couple of days I've been driving around in a Honda HR-V. And I really like the new Honda HR-V. I think the way it's proportioned, it's sort of it feels like a big car, but it's not a big car. The A-pillar is quite upright, and the windscreen is really quite shallow, like a Jimny, like a sort of older school car.
Is it?
Yeah, it is, but in a good way.
I am not 100% on the design of that car.
No?
Because I think it's a bit of a curate's egg, and the, like, there was one...
A flesh door, you say?
A flesh door. No, it's curate's eggs. I there was one I used to park near my old house, and I used to walk past it all the time, and so I had sort of a chance to look at its design quite a lot, and this one appeared quite soon after that car came out. But I thought it's good in places, but from the back, somehow, there's something it's lacking substance. It looks a bit flimsy somehow, almost like it's a model. Like,
does it?
You know those cheap toy cars you'd get on holiday sometimes, and they were just a very thin shell with like and spindly paper clips for axles. It looks like that. I don't know, there's something about it. I think it sits quite high at the back.
It's very high up. So anyone that says I want an SUV, I don't think you actually have to have one. You just have to have really high suspension, a bit like, remember those Peugeot 505 seven seaters we were talking about the other week?
Yeah.
In the 80s. They were a passenger normal car, but they were really high. Really high. Huge suspension
high,
travel.
So but if also, you, I always feel like French cars of that era, were all sat high at the back, didn't they? It's a sort of very, apart from Citroëns, but...
I think it was to just tick the Moroccan market box. That's, I'm
certainly
convinced.
Certainly for big Peugeots, yeah.
But no, I dig the HR-V. It's weird you say that because the back's one of my favourite bits, the way it just chops straight down. I think it looks quite stocky and like, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough. But yeah, so just thought I'd pop
also,
that one in there, you know.
Did you ever hear the radio ads for that car?
No.
When it came out, I was going through a phase of listening intensely to Absolute 90s.
Absolute Radio.
Absolute. I think I mentioned this before, how it freaks me out how they can have a DJ who's across all the Absolute networks and he never crashes the songs. And
no,
several
never.
Listeners, when I mentioned this before, sent me an article about how that's achieved. It's very clever. They just have a computerised system that knows the length of all the songs and figures it out. But the advert for the HR-V was really sort of damning it with faint praise, almost. I can't
really?
Remember exactly what it said, but yeah.
It's only a new Honda, you shouldn't really bother looking, but actually it's not that bad.
One of them was trying to make the point that it's a very sort of, I think they were trying to say, you know, it's a very easy car to live with because it's so convenient.
Yeah.
But it sort of went, it basically went, unobtrusive styling. You're saying it's bland. I mean, it didn't. I can't remember. I'd have to try and find the ad, which I'm sure.
I know why they've done that. I know why they've done that, because of the chaos of the design in recent time for Honda. It's gone from kind of someone dropping two E's and then sitting in a cupboard with a cluster of crayons. and just going, I can't stop moving, got to keep moving and sketching. Then when the E came out, the Honda E, I think it hopefully showed people that you could have excellent design without too many lines and too much fuss. And the HRV, and actually the new Civic, which landed very, very recently. Again, that's...
Did it drop?
It's dropped. I didn't want to say that, Richard, because it just sound. I think I don't know if that's the same category for me as Send It. I don't know how I feel about Send It. See, as someone that is now a professional YouTuber, people have to say, oh, you know, the new video has dropped. And I don't want to say that, so I'm running out of ways to say there's a new video. There's a new film. You need to watch it. So I've got, you know, it's now live. It's been uploaded. It's ready. I've set it off. I've released it like a wild animal that's been injured, and I've nursed it back to health. I don't actually know how to say it, and I feel so British about it. Whereas if I was American, I'd just launch into excellent PR speak and just get it done.
Is this like the other morning when my American wife told our children that it was time to leave the house to go to school with the phrase, it's time to roll out?
Oh, amazing. I mean, no British person's ever said that.
No, I couldn't say that. I'd sound like an idiot. But she just said it like totally naturally. And the kids went, oh, okay. And
our British carpet fitters say that. No one else in Britain says that. Isn't it? Seriously. Come on.
And maybe personal trainers a little bit, or physiotherapists.
But yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You get one of those agonising foam cylinders that wreaks havoc on the back of your legs.
They are bastards, those things.
They are bastards.
Yeah.
The HRV, I've not driven it. And that's the thing. I mean, I do like bits of the design, and I think you're right, after the chaos of Honda design in recent times, it is at least...
It's welcomed.
You know, cohesive.
Yeah, it is.
But I've not driven it. And I sort of feel like maybe I should, because is it a good Honda?
Yeah, I feel like it's a good Honda. I feel like it's a good Honda. It's like the what is there appears to have been put there in a very thoughtful manner. I'm going to say it's got a CVT gearbox, my wife's been driving it for about the last 24 hours, and she actually messaged me the other day. She said, I think there's something wrong with this Honda. It revs really high when I'm not going fast. I tried to explain to her that it was a different gearbox, but she instantly cut me down, and she just said, no, it's not. There's something definitely wrong with it. And I went, no. I said, no, this is what I do for a living. It is called a CVT gearbox.
I like the way that she just went, no, shut up, Johnny Smith, the renowned car journalist and automotive YouTuber. You're wrong about the CVT gearbox. It's just
engine's
broken.
The engine's damaged. What's going on with it? Well,
disorientating, though, aren't they? It's ages since I've driven a CVT. Probably the last time was the sort of faux CVT in a Prius.
It's just like
that sort of.
Have you ever driven a car? Have you ever driven an old, like, hanging car that's got a slipping clutch?
Yes.
And do you remember how you got it off the line and sort of got it up to speed successfully without melting it or getting stranded on the hard shoulder?
I think it depends on it, but if you think the clutch is on the way out, I hate slipping clutches. I hate the sound of a slipping clutch. I hate everything about
it. Smell is just like a load of mackerel on a radiator, isn't it? It's awful. It's awful.
Everything about it is awful. So, hey, now on that note,
listen, guys.
Guys, look. A mate of mine came over the other day. And who's an American friend of mine who's over from the US, and he's a car journalist, so he'd blagged a press car and he'd blagged a Ford Mustang because his editor had said to him he was hoping to borrow something that you can't get in the US, like a Peugeot or something. And then his editor went, no, stories that always do well for us are, you know, driving something very American, but in unfamiliar territory.
And right-hand drive, yeah. Mustang.
Okay, yeah, so he borrowed a Mustang. And he was in the area, so he popped over, and we said, well, let's go out for some lunch. He went, you can drive. So I drove this. It was a manual V8 convertible.
Sweet.
And it was much nicer than I remember the Mustang being. Just, like, nice to drive. But also, I haven't driven a manual for, like, months. Because my Land Rover's in storage at the moment, and our other cars are automatics. And
are you missing the manual? Press cars in.
It was more that I suddenly went, uh-oh, in front of somebody else. I was like, what if I've lost the technique? And yeah. those manual Mustangs, I think anyone who's ever driven one will know, they're not the easiest cars to drive smoothly. And I always think, you know, part of the skill of driving a manual well isn't just sort of heel and toeing it down into a tricky hairpin bend. It's also just driving normally but smoothly. And it was suddenly like, oh, God. And I did set off and I did do a little bit of slippage by accident because you're still sort of getting a feel for the
bite point. Yeah.
And but I was like, is this that? I couldn't possibly work this out, but I was like, is this the longest I've gone without driving a manual car since I learnt to drive? I don't know, but
you didn't
it was
do,
nice.
You didn't do the pulling up to a junction and just using the brake, but the car's still in third, and then it starts to violently judder and sort of throw its engine mounts out.
Yeah.
Like it spat some teeth. My dad's done that a few times.
I came close, I think. I also stalled it on a hill because I was still getting a feel for it. And it was just like, I thought I'd got it and the fire just went out. And I was like, ah. So, yes. That's the only reason I bring this up. It's just
funny you should say that because I got the Dodge out of hibernation yesterday.
Oh.
First time this year, which is shameful because it's July. It's July, basically. But I've been working on it over the last few evenings and afternoons with my nephew because he said, Uncle Johnny, I really want you to take me and my friends to the prom when we've finished our GCSEs in the Dodge. Can we go in the Dodge? Please, can we go in the Dodge? And I was like, of course. And it's sometimes good to have a deadline, I feel. If anyone's listening who's got a car which is older or a bit temperamental, it kind of gives you that look, let's get it done. It needs to be on the road anyway. I was ashamed of myself that I hadn't got it on the road before May. Let's do this, as they say.
I also wonder if the rise of the prom in the UK, for American listeners, we didn't used to have the prom in the UK. There used to be, there probably sort of was, but it was just called your sort of school leavers disco, probably, wasn't it?
Yeah, or it was called someone's got a big house, we're all going to go there, cider and fingering, basically. But it doesn't have the same ring to it as prom, so I think probably prom one overall.
Yeah, prom is shorthand for the same thing.
Yeah,
but, well, it's school organized, isn't it, the prom, but also people get dressed up.
Oh yes, that's right. It's like young people looking like they're going to an opera.
Yes.
But I don't think they are. I don't actually.
They all look slightly awkward, like a bunch of awkward people going to the opera. Particularly the boys. I always think sort of teenage boys in dinner suits. You have to be a confident teenager.
It's because they're man children. Like my nephew, he's 16. He's pretty much the same height as me and my brother. In fact, he's got the same size feet as me because I've given him some of my hand-me-down Adidases, which he adores. And so I'm feeling like, well, he's kind of the same stature as me, but he is only 16, so there is a little bit of a man-child going on there. But what I do love is the fact that he really wanted to work on the car with me to get it, because he knew it needed a couple of things doing after getting it. He got a bit of a hammering last year and not as much maintenance as it should because of all the late brake events. And he was like, can I work on it with you, Uncle Johnny? And I was like, damn right you can. Yeah, because I'm clueless. So, yeah, come on in. And he's really enjoyed it.
Do you think, though, because you're not the only person I've heard say, or I've been asked to take kids, like either their own kids or nieces, nephews, neighbours, children, to a prom because I've got an interesting car. Do you think the rise of the prom in this country has accelerated some old car projects a little bit?
Yeah, I do. I did speak to someone a couple of years ago when my other nephew had a prom, and he wanted... He's not really into cars, but he said, oh, I quite like Audi R8s. So I managed to pull a string at Audi, and I got him an R8 convertible roadster. which was quite cool. Although the traffic to get in and out of the prom took about an hour, and it made me realise how little leg room there is in an Audi V10 Roadster. But
that, yeah, there's no space in that car as if you're tall.
No.
It's a nightmare because it's such a lovely car, but yeah, it's really hard to get comfy.
I felt like I was living in a box of Cook's Matches for about 2 hours. Honestly, I had to go for a long walk afterwards because I was crippled. It's like an 80s supercar where you know that ergonomically they're a bit shite. But this was a brand new car.
Yeah, but I found either your legs have to be scrunched up or you have to sit bolt upright like you're in a Methodist church. It's just like, there's no in between. And either way, that's not how I want to drive a supercar.
The Methodist spec supercar
stunts.
Other
churches are available. In fact, they're all, there's no such thing as a well-reclined church pew, is there?
Supercar pew. Do you know what? That if this podcast wasn't called Smith & Smith, we could have called it the Supercar Pew. Would have quite liked that. It makes it feel like we're going to get straight to business and talk hard about about supercar
take a
matters.
Pew. I can hear the music now. It's slightly overdramatic. And it just, take a pew. We're going to talk about supercars. Yeah.
But one of us would have to be a little bit better moneyed so we can just buy supercars on a whim and then decide if we like them and then get rid of them if we don't. So maybe that's something we could do in the future, Richard, is what I'm saying.
Maybe, yeah. If we suddenly become fantastically wealthy, or one of us does.
Yeah, only one of us.
Then you get that sort of American podcast vibe where they always have a super rich guy on who's going, and then my Chiron got delayed and that was a total pit in the ass. And he's just like, is it really? Well... I feel for you, sir. I'm sure they're going to launch some kind of Band-Aid style record for this one.
I don't know whether... Anyway, are you ever going to buy a brand new supercar?
No. No.
I can't see so many other things. Buying a brand new supercar.
I'd buy... If I had that kind of money, I'd want a 458 Speciale.
Yeah.
Still my favourite car, I think.
One of my neighbours got one. One of my friends. Big shout out to Simon. Yeah, he's got one. Yeah, he has, yeah.
What a bastard.
Yeah, well, he's not.
He's between us, we know someone, because James May's got one, so...
What a flute.
Yeah,
yeah. Should we text them right now at the same time? We're just using the word, just two words, you flute, and then see, what have I done? And then just go, realise you've got a 458 Speciale.
No, keep them on the hook.
Oh, okay.
You know
what you've done.
No, I don't. Honestly, I don't know.
Should we do that?
You disgust me. Honestly, I think you've got me for what's going on here.
You're a nasty piece of work, aren't you? Smarmy. Yeah. I don't like
selfish.
Smarmy people.
Yeah.
Really not very nice.
But just a day-long cavalcade of abuse and then finally go, it's because you've got that 458 Speciale.
Cavalcade.
I would actually know, but no, I wouldn't. A new supercar.
Yeah. Yeah, right now. Like, you had to go and buy a brand new supercar now. And you're not allowed to sell it for sheer profit.
Do you know what I would think about is that Maserati MC20, the Cielo version with no roof? Because we saw that at Goodwood, and I just thought it was such a nice-looking car.
Yeah.
And I like the vibe that it's not sort of meant to be all-out, totally, nang-nang-nang-nang sporty. It's meant to be a bit more of a... You know, it's got a sort of comfortable side to its character.
I'm with you.
I like the idea of owning a Maserati. I just think it sounds cool. You know, Ferrari, it's a bit, oh dear, he's trying so hard. And I don't know, Maserati, just a bit less twatty.
I think I wrote on social media, and I might have ruffled some feathers recently. I said, the MC20 is the first modern Maserati that seems to actually be good. Genuinely probably an exciting car to drive, whereas there's so many Maseratis over the last 20 years that they might have sounded okay, but they've been so average in many other ways. You just go, do I really want to live with this? It just reeks to me of just Beverly Hills peacocking and nothing more. But maybe I'm being hard on it. I love the Trident. I love the logo. I love the Trident.
Sweet logo.
And I also really appreciate the heritage of Maserati because it's got one of the best car heritages out there. And it doesn't delve in as deeply to that satchel of heritage that it should.
This is the new one from Satchel of Heritage.
Hang on. Right. What's its support band? Don't. Its support band is a Rucksack of Sacrilege, or they hate one another. They absolutely hate one another.
History papoose. It's true, they don't, do they? It feels like they probably could milk it more because there's more to milk. You know, if you think about, I think Jaguar has been guilty of sort of really plundering essentially three cars or four.
Yeah,
it's XK120, C-type, D-type and E-type. And it's like, that's
been swinging on the teats of its heritage for ages. And that's okay, because that's their story. I think the older I get, the more I realise the backstory is more and more important to kind of rope people in or, I don't know, ignite some enthusiasm and passion about people who have never taken any notice of a brand before or whatever. So, yeah, get those stories out there. Mazza have got some incredible things going on. And then that recent interview with Harry Metcalf on the brown chairs that I did, I completely forgot that he had that Ghibli cup. And that Ghibli cup pretty much turned him into a, I'm not going to say celebrity, but it got him on the radar of the traditional news, car news journalists and people like that in this country at the time. Pre social media and emailing and stuff, really. And
I like the fact that his car, his personal car, sort of effectively became the press car, because Maserati themselves didn't really have an operation set up to
Harry
did it for them.
Yeah, he bought it and pimped it, and that's what started this kind of this interest spooling up. So yeah, I think MC20 is a good shout. I'm a bit weird with supercars, because maybe I'm a bit all or not at all. I've always had a thing for Koenigseggs, because I think they're so obsessive and so over the top, but also, I guess, so expensive. I really like the Regera. The Agera. Yes, the Agera. And I always like the very first one, which I've now forgotten the name of because my mind's gone blank. But the first was Koenigsegg.
There was the CCS. Was that the first
that
one?
Was it.
There was one before it. Was it the CCS?
I think it was CCS. Then the CCX. Was the CCX and the CCS?
Ah, yes.
I think it was the CCS. But I just think, again, it's a supercar without that many winglets and fins and fuss. And that really... And also a slightly longer gear stick than you were expecting to see. And I think that always intrigued me as a motoring journalist. A slightly longer wand than one might expect in that cabin. But it was quite cool. But again, an awful lot of money. An awful lot of money to spend on a car. So I think... We kind of chatted about it at Goodwood when we were looking for a life support coffee. Was in the world of kind of sports and supercars, and let's say kind of two-seat joyful cars, is the future of it is making it feel like it's more engaging but not necessarily going faster, because we've got to the point where there's so much firepower going on in them and there's so much grip and they're getting physically wider where they can't fit on the roads that aren't going to be widened. God, this podcast is suddenly getting serious. What the hell's going on?
I know. Heaven forfend. But no, it's a fair point. But back to your original question, it's like, is there any supercar that you'd actually buy? And you sort of spool through the Ferrari range and you kind of go, well, that 296 does look nice. But would you... McLaren arterial disease, would you go with one of those? And I sort of... I don't know.
I like the look of it. I don't know about the reality of it. I really like the look of the Radford. And again, I like the idea of you take a car that we already know is exciting and it's sort of proven, so you're not wasting your time too much on R&D like some of these cottage industry manufacturers do. And I love the body of the Radford. I think there's so many cool shapes going on in it. I actually can't remember how much it is. But
it's seven figures, isn't it?
Oh, bloody hell. I might put that one on ice. I might.
I know.
I'll just keep texting Ant Anstead and say, would you do us another deal?
I'm sure he would.
Yeah.
They're only making 62 of them, aren't they? So I suppose they...
Well, they've probably sold 60 of them, so it's not like... I don't think they probably need to give them away.
No.
Especially to idiots like me.
Know.
I can't even afford it. I don't even know what I'm talking about. It's just all...
I wonder how many they have sold, because... I heard a rumour about another well-known sort of hyper car that they've only sold 5 out of, I think they're going to make 100 or something.
Really?
Yeah, so it's not a given that these kind of limited run, super expensive cars immediately get snapped up by collectors and what have you.
Nah.
You know, they have to sort of earn their place, because even if you're going to buy it and stick it away in a collection and just hope that it keeps earning money for you by appreciating, it's only going to appreciate if everybody agrees that
it's worth it.
It's worth it, and yeah. It's that weird thing, isn't it? Even though it could be absolute dog plop to drive, but if somehow it's got something about it that people like in some way or other, good, you know, good story.
Yeah, folklore.
BMW Z8's an interesting case, isn't it? Because at the time, it was kind of slated for being pretty nasty to drive. And but they are extremely valuable now, aren't they,
Is it the rare groove? I'm wondering, has it got the Bristol effect, that car? Because I'm still not that bothered about it. I like some angles of it, but I do struggle with it. But I remember when it came out, but I'm not that bothered about it. But then there's quite a few BMWs of that era. I'm not that bothered about an 8 Series, and I never really have been.
The original 8 Series?
Yeah. That's right, the original with the pop-up headlights. I've driven both of them, the V8 and the V12, and I'm only a bit lukewarm on it. Bit lukewarm. I think it looks okay, but I don't want one. Don't want to own one. And what was that absolutely rubbish looking Aston Martin that we saw at the auction that we both kind of just went, oh, that proportionally, it looks like a knockoff version of itself.
It was a late Virage Volante.
Yeah. No offence to anybody that's listening to this podcast that owns one. I just think it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. It looks like a Capri kit car. That they haven't been able to get the right wheels for the arches and stuff, and it just doesn't meld together properly.
No, it was...
I think it was you that looked inside and went, I'm sure that steering wheel's off a Ford Crown Victoria. And you're like...
It bloody is.
Yeah, so I mean...
It definitely is. I think Crown Vic. It's that sort of... Back when they hadn't quite figured out how to package airbags in a very small boss, they had to make a massive... You had to have sort of essentially like a hotel pillow in the middle of the wheel. And Ford, for some reason, put the blue oval badge down the sort of bottom...
It was off-centre, right, that's pillow. Right, it was.
And I can't remember they done that, Aston. They just prized the Ford badge off and just left an oval indentation there, I think.
It was
absolute dog plop.
They're shaking their fists at how easy people have got it now with 3D printing. Like cottage car manufacturers are like, we could just think it and then press the return button and we've got a small batch of them made within 3 days. But back then you couldn't do that.
I've never driven, but I love the Vantage based on that car. With the sort of glassed in 6 lights,
yeah,
wider arches, and I do think that's a proper sort of, you know, bulldog of a car, and that's all great. But that cabrio, everything about it.
I mean, the back windows didn't quite go down right. The hood didn't package right. I mean, honestly, it's just a tick box of not quite right.
It's just everything about it. We go. Could you sum up the state of the handmade British car industry in the 90s? And you'd go, yeah.
It was
caught in an awkward moment where, you know, the its predecessor was sort of very obviously handmade and old-fashioned, and it was like they were trying to make it look modern, but their techniques didn't really permit it to be proper. So it's just awful.
I mean, in all seriousness, if someone said to me, do you want a very late, good condition, ex-detective Crown Victoria in Interceptor... which you can put a couple of, you know, some tubular wishbones on it and a couple of little smart mods, or that Aston Martin, which I think was going to book at about 90,000 quid or 80,000 quid.
Yeah.
Which one would you have? I mean, I can't tell you how little the contest is. There's no contest here. It's just no contest. It's just, I'll have the Crown Victoria. I will give my children a nest egg. I'll have a mad week away with my friends, and I will laugh next time I see one of those driving down the road, which is never, because I actually can't remember the last time I saw one driving down the road.
So. Well, you don't, do you? You just don't see them around. No. Because I sort of feel like you'd have more fun in the Crown Vic.
Of course you'd have more fun in the Crown
Vic. Apart from anything else, you just wouldn't care about it as well. So you wouldn't be precious about driving it. You think, well, if it breaks, you can just get some bits from America, because they're still quite easy to maintain.
Still want one. I already own two American cars, so I have no reason for another one. It's a stupid idea. But at some point, I would like a very late detective spec Crown Vic. Ideally last year of production. Because my brother's got, you know, he's got the very last of the two-stroke Trabants, and there's at least four people in the world that give a flying toss about that, and I'm one of them. So it's quite cool. You know, buying a post-Berlin Wall fall two-stroke Trabant, that's commitment.
So then it's one of the ones just before they put a Polo engine in it, didn't they, the Trabant? But did they keep making the two-stroke at the same time, or is it just a straight switchover?
That's a good question. I think there was a changeover. My brother's is a June 1990 two-stroke Trabant.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, that is real wallfall spec.
That is proper.
Hasselhoff's here. The wall's gone over.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
quick.
Yeah. There's a
grab one of the last ones.
There's a tape selector in the centre console. You know, those push-out ones. And they're all David Hasselhoff, all 10 of them.
Somebody told me... I can't remember who this was, said to me that it was remarkable how quickly Trabants disappeared off the roads of what was East Germany after the wall came down.
Yeah.
Just like nobody, there was absolutely no nostalgia for that car, understandably so, but there was no affection for it. As soon as people there had access to other cars.
Yeah. They'd seen it too long. I think it was...
Yeah,
I think the hunger for optimism probably drop kicked them out as quickly as possible, and I believe it sort of happened a bit in Poland with the 126P. But then now there's real affection for it, because I guess at least with the 126s you could get them in brighter colours, whereas Trabants all came in horrible prosthetic limb colours, and there isn't one colour which is desirable in a Trabant. Really, they're all so dowdy.
Yeah.
And the interiors, honestly, the fabric looks so scratchy. You know, the sort of like free donated chairs to a village hall kind of textile.
Yes.
Just like, you just look at it and go, oh, I don't know if I want to sit on it, but I've got to. So, okay, put a cloth down first. Put a bin liner on it.
Someone in Poland did tell me that about the 126. The Maluk.
Maluk, yeah.
Just went, as soon as we didn't have to have these, we didn't have them. It's the same with the FSO Bolognese.
Yeah.
You just don't see them around. I went to Warsaw about 5-6 years ago, and it's just...
Warsaw?
The main thing I noticed.
You went to Warsaw?
Warsaw, yeah. Very hard to understand the accent. But then I went to Poland. you'd never see old cars. Any old cars, because they didn't have old Western cars.
No.
And the cars they did have back then, as soon as they didn't have to have them, everybody just went, well, fuck that. And they got, I know, just a lot of Kias on the streets, I thought.
They just wore them out, didn't they? Here's something
I think they just threw them away. As soon as they could, I think they threw them away, because that's the thing. It's a symbol of a time that nobody looks back on with affection.
Yeah.
Or few people do.
Yeah. So in the same way that I'm going back to the supercar thing, my prediction, if I was going to be Mystic Meg or Mystic Metcalf about it, I would say the future.
Sorry, I can only picture Harry in a headscarf now.
Harry in a headscarf with one of those, what, a silky one? It's one of those silk prints.
Not like a sort of elegant lady in the passenger seat of a Triumph Stag driving down to Nice. I'm thinking more, you know, sort of wizened old crone at a fairground going, cross my palm with silver and I shall tell you what Testarossa values are going to do in the next 6 months.
So that's what we've got to do with Harry. That's what we've got to do. If we ever do a Smith & Sniff tour, I think as our warm-up act, it will be... And I haven't asked him yet whether this would happen, but it should be Harry in an Airstream, and you go, you pay a tenner and you go through the cloaky doors, and it's all dark. There's just a couple of candles, and then on the wall you can see a few posters of 70s sports cars, And then and a Pirelli calendar, which you go, oh, hello, it's a bit saucy. And then you sit down, and basically that's what happens. He'll say, right.
An Airstream, though, it's a bit flash, isn't it? I was thinking, an old Monza.
One of those beige and brown ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so a Monza. But you clock as you go in. It's only a single axle Monza, but it does have Lotus wheels on it. So you're going, okay. Bit of thought's gone into that. It's a lightweight caravan, obviously. And someone's put some choice rims on it. Someone's thought about that, because Harry's a thinker. He's done that. He's gone, yeah, all right. I'll play it down a bit, but I'm going to go for some half-decent rims that are light. When you go in there, and he'll just say, right, cars that interest you, talk to me. And you'll say two types of car, and then he'll map out the next 10 years of that car's life. And then at the end, he'll throw in a couple of things like, someone you love will die, and and your auntie's alternator will fail in June next year.
Yes. I'm seeing a Nissan Qashqai. Does that ring any bells? Yeah, my uncle's got one. The rear number plate finisher. Has it come off? Yes, it has, actually. It's like he's doing that thing that those sort of psychics, in inverted commas, do, where they say bloody obvious things that is easy to guess, but people are wowed by their prescience.
So does he have a...
That's his act.
Does he have a printout under the table of all the recalls of all car manufacturers of the last 10 years? So he just goes...
Yeah.
Okay.
Has it ever needed any work on the seatbelt warning light? Yeah, it has actually. I had to go back to the dealer for that. I got a letter. I thought so. He's got CCTV in the car park, so he's watching people getting out of their cars and when they come in. I see that you have a 330D. That's amazing. How did you know, Mystic Metcalf? It's all, you know, it's all preordained, but you know, punters don't need to know that until they've crossed his palm with SO vouchers.
What do you mean?
Can you get SO vouchers?
No, it'd be Shell Nectar. Can you share Nectar points? Because, you know, you can sort of move them across from one card to another. So you sort of donate, you pay him in Nectar. So it's not a real... Is that a cryptocurrency? No. Nectar points cryptocurrencies?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, okay.
But let's say they are. Let's start saying they are.
We'll put that out to the public.
Make them sound more fashionable.
Yeah.
I have a terrible thing with loyalty cards that, you know, someone will go, have you got a Nectar card? Have you got a Boots card? Whatever. And I always say, I don't know, as in I don't, comma, no, I know. But if I say it wrong, which I quite often do, and I can't stop doing it nonetheless, people, it sounds like I'm going, I don't know.
You don't even know what the concept of them is?
I did once have a guy who just went, you don't know? And I was like, no, I don't.
Well,
no.
When loyalty cards, we're going off track a bit now, hey, surprise, surprise. But when the loyalty card thing kicked off in a big way, I remember I had my, you know, that multicoloured Mercedes 123 estate that I used to have. This is before you and I knew one another, but they used to sometimes suffer with quite bad rot on the scuttle. On one corner of the lower windscreen. And bearing in mind this car cost me a penny and I was running it on a shoestring. There was some rot there, which I knew was starting to leak down the back of the pedal box. So in heavy rain, it would make the passenger or the driver's footwell wet, and it was bloody annoying.
Yeah.
Well, one day I went out there and thought, well, I don't have a welder, and I've got to take an enormous amount of finishing plates and trim off to weld it anyway. So I scraped all the rust out, and there was a hole there, probably the size of a 50 pence piece. And I thought, oh, that's quite bad. So do you know what I did? I reached into my pocket and I found two loyalty cards that I didn't give a flying toss about. And I got some Tiger Seal in a syringe gun type thing. And if you've ever touched Tiger Seal, once you've got it on your fingers, it's never coming off, ever. That's it. Imagine, I don't know, imagine heavy oil-based honey that you've just poured over your own body and then tried to climb into a shower to shower it off. The water won't get rid of it. It's not going anywhere. Kind of.
It's tacky.
It's very tacky. Well, it's just tar. Like, you know, like a medieval, you know, they pour tar out the tops of castles on intruders. It's kind of like that. And
I was going to say, because my benchmark for a thing that's weirdly hard to get off your hands is slug trail stuff.
Oh, okay. Yes, it is. You're absolutely right.
It's revoltingly difficult to get off. And anyway, but that's not thick, is it? Sort of almost that's the opposite.
Is it like hoisin sauce really when you're walking around a prestigious event and people are coming up to you wanting to shake your hand or chat, and you've
I've been laughing about that all week.
Have you?
I don't know why I find it so funny. It's just of all the things, hoisin sauce, because it's just like you could run through a lot of stuff: jam, honey. Even like, oh, sorry, I've got some margarine on my hands, would be going... Oh,
well, that just sounds a little bit Last Tango in Paris to me, doesn't it? You're walking around the festival in Spiti, yes. I've got goose fat all over my hands. Well, the thing, oh, you're fresh God. Out of a steam rally.
Still, I won't shake your hands. I'm covered
in
something you wouldn't expect anybody to be covered in at 9:30 in the morning.
Well, yeah, that just reaffirmed the point. I was eating a random breakfast.
But you mended your old Mercedes by... tarring two loyalty cards.
I slathered the first one, and I'd already kill rusted the area. You know, you treat the rust, you convert it, or whatever they call it. But I slapped one of them on, and then I put another one over the top, then a generous smear around the edge like a seam sealer, and then I put the trims back on that covered most of it but not all of it. And it never leaked again. Not what I would call a professional repair. But it did the job, and it added to the story of that car. I miss that car.
Fair enough, then.
I miss that car very much.
God, I miss those guys, yeah.
I miss you, man. I miss you. I'm trying to remember what your number plate was. B something. B, yeah.
B, oh, it was quite a late one.
It was a late one, yeah. So it had the hydraulic tappets, so I'm pleased about that. It's just got a better looking cam cover as well. The old ones have got a cam cover which looks like something out of a World War submarine. I always think it just looks the engine looks too old for the car. I know that sounds a bit weird. Do you not think the aesthetics of some engines are just fundamentally disappointing, even though the car is exciting? I'm going to say, yes. Mark 1 Golf GTI.
Very ordinary.
It's just so ordinary, and it looks gawky. I'm going to use the word gawky. Mm. Whereas you pop the bonnet on an Alfa Romeo. I know we've said this about Alfas before, but it's just the engine. Someone's really thought about the aesthetics of the engine. So it's actually a joy to do the screen wash and check the oil, because you go, look at that. That's good, isn't it? That's really good. I'd love to know any other engines that are like that.
The one that always bugs me is the Jaguar V12.
Yeah.
Particularly in the XJ.
Yeah.
It's just a right mess.
Oh, it's a rat's nest of vacuum pipes and stuff. It's almost one of the things that makes me not want one. It's because I just go, do you know what? I'll just go with the 6. I'll just tune the 6. What the hell? Yeah. I don't need all of this mess.
Because you do also look at it and you just go, that's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
And where am I going to start with trying to find out what's gone wrong when it's a massive plastic tub of Christmas tree lights with an engine underneath it. And it stresses me out just looking at it. It makes me slightly, it just feels slightly.
And you don't even own
one. Oh my God. I don't even own one. But they did tidy it up in the later ones. Maybe that's why I sort of have a hankering for an XJ40 shape.
12. V12. Yeah.
Because they did tidy it up a bit.
I did say, I mentioned to you, didn't I, that someone's contacted the Late Break Show. Their late father had an XJ12, so an XJ40. I think it's a 1994 car, I want to say, 93?
If it's a 94, it'd be very, very late.
It's a really late one, and he's kept it. It was his dad's, and he's kept it. He said, I don't do many miles in it, but you just don't see them anymore, and I know how much Dad really liked it. And I think I forwarded you the email and went, that's your dream car, that is. Mm. You'd love it.
It is, and I liked the Jaguar spec, because for reasons that I can't figure out in marketing terms, it doesn't quite make sense. Do you remember how like basic XJ6s had, sorry, that's my dog, she's in the room with me, in this echoey room, because I'm recording in a different room today and it's irritatingly echoey because we haven't got any furniture in it. The basic XJ6 had 4 round headlights, and then the Sovereign and the Daimler, they had the rectangular lights.
That's right.
And they brought in the XJ12, which you'd think, you know, XJ12 outranks any 6-cylinder car, you'd think, but somehow the Jag XJ12 had the round lights.
Oh, it did.
And it also had cross-spoke alloys, which looked quite good.
That's right.
And then the Daimler V12 got the double six, got the rectangular lights. So there's sort of strange headlight hierarchy there. But I thought that with the round lights and the cross spoke wheels, that shape, the XJ81 for Jag nerds, looked really good, or as good as an XJ40 shape can look, which is, you know,
okay,
not amazing, but yes.
My pair of SOVs, they were oblong headlight cars.
I know a lot of people prefer them because they think it's sort of...
of its time.
You know, just, yeah, of its time, suits the design. And I always err towards the trad quad lights,
harking back to when cars used to be... The heyday of the modified car scene in the 90s mostly, and then the sort of early portion of the 2000s. If you remember, and I don't know if they're still going, there was a French company called Morette, and Morette would do the double headlight conversion for any car pretty much that you could think of. So if you think about Sierras, which had the quad headlight conversion,
yes,
and Escorts, and Subarus, and all, well, it was by a French company called Morette.
And I never knew that. And they were, one company was doing all of that, because it was quite fashionable for a while, wasn't it?
It was very fashionable, but also it was expensive. Like, Morette would do I think this is before a lot of Far East companies came in and tried to undercut what was going on.
Mm.
But yeah, Morette would do these quad headlight conversions for anything, you know, Peugeot 106s. We used to see it all the time. And they were expensive. Like, if you wanted a quad headlight conversion for I can't remember what I got a quote for one once. It was a good 500 quid. It might have even been more than that. So it was a lot. You had to want it. And I always think that that Jag looked like someone had done a Morette conversion on on an oblong headlight Jag. But maybe any listeners out there have got a Morette quad headlight converted vehicle.
Yeah. I wonder what is the least likely car to have a quad headlight conversion? Do you know what else looked like it had a bit of a sort of posh Morette job done on it? Was when they put four round lights on Bentleys that were still the same shape as a Rolls-Royce.
Yeah. So,
the turbo R's and stuff.
That's right.
And it sort of worked. I mean, it did work, and we got used to it. But I remember the first time I saw one, I was being like, "Oh God, it looks like an aftermarket conversion, or like it's what the US market one would have looked like because it had got sealed beams on it." And so, sorry, the dog. Why are you whining?
Yeah, the dog sounds like. Do you know what it sounds like? It sounds like someone in the background's tuning a fretless bass while you're trying to talk, or it's got really hungry tummy syndrome.
There's something in the garden that has displeased her. I don't know what it is. Probably a pigeon. And she's an idiot, but she's just sort of standing out there looking out the window going, like, I want to go and shout at you, but you can't because the door is shut.
I realised the other day that I'd be annoyed by pigeons because they annoy me. orally, anyway. My dad...
Orally.
Yeah, orally. My dad, when I was having a walk with my dad the other week, he said, no, actually, I find magpies more annoying orally than pigeons. And we don't agree on this, because I said, magpie's quite a cheeky... he thinks they're sort of antagonising him. Like they're laughing at him like a hyena.
Antagonising.
The thing about a pigeon is it's like a really, really crap ringtone that just nobody's picking the phone up. So it's just going on and on and on and on. And you can't turn it off because it's not your phone.
Isn't it more like one of those alarms that you choose off your phone because you think it'd be a gentle way to wake up?
Da, 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 da.
Da, da. You're talking about wood pigeons here rather than your scratty city pigeon.
Well, there is a minor difference, isn't it? One of them goes da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. And the other one, and the other one goes da 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 da.
And of course, there's the Nokia pigeon, which goes da 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 da.
I'd like a Nokia pigeon. It would mix things up a bit rather than being so boring to listen to. I just want to like get a really big pole and start swinging it around the tree.
I've never heard someone have such a visceral reaction.
I can't stand the sound
of
pigeons.
In nature.
It's just really? To me, it's synonymous with boredom. It's absolutely synonymous with being bored as a kid on, say, let's just say a Sunday, and you hear the pigeon, and the pigeon's just sitting in the tree, they're together, and they're just, it's like, I don't know, two old deaf people talking at one another, but no one's listening. They're both just talking, but there's no one responding to one another. They're just doing the same. I hate it. Hate it.
So as a kid, when you were watching cartoons, if Dastardly and Muttley were going, "Stop the pigeon," you were like, "Yeah, get the fuck out.
Oh, yeah, stop the pigeon.
Smash him with a iron bar. Yeah. Kick him with boots on. Nah.
Man him, grab him, push him, shove him, maim him.
Shoot him in the face. Nah, I hate pigeons.
I don't want pigeon death. I'm not saying I go out and kill pigeons, because, I mean, I know you can. You know, obviously, pigeon shooting and stuff is a thing. But I don't want to kill the pigeons. I just don't want them to talk near me. Is that okay to say that? No, I really don't like it. I find it very irritating.
Oh.
Yeah. It's nothing to do with cars. Nothing to do with cars at all. It's not even relevant.
No. Well, just to bring it back onto cars, yeah. I was in a local park the other day and I saw a man with a Ferrari hand tattoo.
Did you?
He'd got a prancing horse on his hand. Now, a friend of mine who's big into tattoos says that any reputable tattoo parlour will not do you a hand tattoo unless you've got lots of other tats and you're clearly sort of an experienced tattoo haver.
Oh, seriously?
I guess because it's, you know, you can't, it's very hard to cover up a hand tattoo unless you wear gloves, which might be weird in summer if you've got a t-shirt on.
Yeah, and it's painful. I would have thought it's very painful because there's no fat on your hand, the back of your hand.
This was sort of sat in the, I mean, not quite in the crook, but on that bit of your hand, there's probably a word for, but sort of up from the thumb below the finger next to your thumb.
What, so below the wrist bone?
Yes, but sitting but just above on sort of, there's a the pad, thumb, you know, there's a paddy bit sort of in the kind of elbow of your it's not an elbow, is it? What we're talking about?
The fleshy like
a,
thumb
a,
elbow.
There's a thumb pit. You've effectively got a thumb pit, haven't
yes.
you? And it's sort of sitting below that. But yeah, no, I mean, not small either. Probably about the length of his thumb, maybe a little bit smaller. Big enough that I could see it as this guy was not immediately standing
but
next to
him. But what about if he doesn't own a Ferrari? I mean, or would it be better that he doesn't?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, which is worse? It's just interesting that you would go to that of all things, but I don't know. I've just never seen that before. And I sort of thought car tattoos generally, it's something you could live to regret, perhaps. I know that people say that about tattoos in general. What if you went right off that car or that car company went bust or something? It's like, oh, yeah, my new MG Rover tattoo looks great. They've what? Oh, no.
Oh, no, it's dated badly.
Or they changed the logo. You know, some car companies are forever fuck-assing.
Well, look at Kia. Look at Kia right now. I mean, I'm driving around in one and a lot of people say it says KA on the back. They go, I can't read it as Kia. I just can't see it.
Yeah.
I become by it. I've seen a tattoo of an RS Turbo before, Escort, which it was proportionally wrong. Yeah, it was proportionally wrong, unfortunately. Again, it looked like someone had bought a, you know, like a kind of Group B body kit, but kept the standard track wheels and tyre combination.
Oh, no.
It was a little bit over body kitted, under wheeled.
That's the thing I always think about tattoo artists, is that you have got to be incredibly good at drawing, but not drawing also, because it's harder than drawing, isn't it? Because you're actually, sketching with a pencil, but you've got to push the pencil through the paper every time.
Well, have you ever tried to draw with a Sharpie on a T-shirt or a piece of fabric that's not stretched hard over a surface?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that.
I suppose it depends on where the tattoo's going, isn't it? Because I imagine some bits the skin stays reasonably taut.
Yeah.
But if you were tattooing, say, someone's scrotum, that would be an absolute nightmare.
I've tried it. It's incredibly hard, and unfortunately, it didn't go. Luckily, nobody gets to see the mistakes I've made, so it's okay.
Well, the Lamborghini bull that you've had put on your ball.
It's actually the Koenigsegg logo in preparation for when I eventually own one. When I go and do that, you know, you do the handshake in front of the car. I'll have my plums sort of exterior of the trouser. But I won't reference it. So Christian von Koenigsegg will be shaking my hands and looking at the camera. But I might have the bag out.
Oh my
covertly.
God. And then he'll just go, Jesus, get him off the premise. Which you can do anything quickly, get a Koenigsegg.
Ordering a Koenigsegg just so I can do the bag out hand over shot.
Johnny's Swedish supercar plum bag fund.
We've not tied the knots of many of the questions we raised today. I was going to talk about like the future of supercar ownership. We were going to talk about the Ioniq 6. Did we actually talk about
the Ioniq 6?
That was the first thing we were supposed to talk about.
Before we started recording, we said, "Oh, what are we going to talk about?"
And
we
both went, "Ioniq 6."
Ioniq 6 is out. And we have to talk about that. But well, look, you've made a video about it, so let's just tell people to watch that.
Ioniq 6. Nothing like the Ioniq 5, and that's intentional.
It is interesting.
Lots of Porsche going on and CLS Merc first gen. In a good way, I think it's interesting. But I think ultimately my heart is still yearning for the Ioniq 5. I still think it's an incredible piece of design, but also practical, and that's why I want one.com.
Good.
Right. Yeah. So well, on that note. Yeah, on that side of things. Yeah. somebody said that to me in a meeting. I don't know if they listen to this podcast, so I don't know if it's a thing. I wasn't sure.
Either they were just sort of taunting you with your own catchphrase.
I think
or
so.
Oblivious.
Yeah, I think they were oblivious, but of course it made my eyebrow raise in that Roger Moore fashion.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Cool. All right. Well, before we go, I've got three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Mates Rates Show, in which Johnny befriends a series of tradespeople in the hope of securing cash-in-hand discounts on home renovations. Thank you to Ash R for that suggestion. The real solo YouTube channel is, of course, The Late Break Show. Many excellent videos on there, including, as we just mentioned, a preview of the high-end Ioniq 6, which is well worth your time. Second thing I've got to tell you is I have various books out. One of them is called Boring Car Trivia 3, the third of the trilogy. But hey, just go and buy all three. They're all different and yet somehow the same. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that for the first 20 years of its existence, the British postbox was not red, it was green.
Yes, I have seen that before or read it. Yeah, but it's a bit like Father Christmas.
Yes, yes. It took a while for the colours to settle down.
And I'd quite like Father Christmas to come back green. I'm wondering whether that'll ever happen, because I just fundamentally prefer the colour green. So just being selfish, frankly. I might ask Mystic Metcalf to make that happen in some way. That's okay.
Weird supplementary fact is that the postbox was introduced to Britain by the author Anthony Trollope.
Really?
Which is
author.
He worked, even after he became a successful author, he worked for the post office. And he was quite senior, and he was the post office employee who recommended that, because before that you had to go to a post office to post a letter.
Of course.
And it was recommended they introduce standalone post boxes, which were introduced in 1854 in the Channel Islands, but it was upon the recommendation of Anthony Trollope, the author.
Thanks to everyone also who's always messaging us. We get lots of lovely emails, and it's sad that we don't respond to them quickly enough.
Well, maybe next week we'll try and read out some emails.
Shall we? Should we do a listener's questions next?
Or we'll read out patrons' messages to...
give them preferential treatment?
Our favourites. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Like having a Boots Advantage card, but you can't gum our patron into an old Mercedes to stop it leaking.
A scuttle. We'll mastic it to a scuttle.
Mastic it to a scuttle.
To stop the rain coming in.
Phrases no one's ever said before. Right, well, until next week, when we may read out some of your messages until, of course, we forget. But if we do remember, that's what we'll be doing next week. See you then. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Love you. do we have to say about subscribing or liking? Or
no, it's a bit late for
Well, just snip this one in. Give us a rating on whatever stream service you use to download or stream this cast. Thanks. Yeah. Bye.
Don't forget to like and also subscribe.
Yeah.
And like.
Thank you. Again.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.